Welcome to I Want to Put a Baby in You, a podcast exploring reproductive technology and life-changing stories. Here are your hosts, Jennifer White and Ellen Trackman.
Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ellen Trackman here with Jennifer White. Hi, Jen.
Hello, I'm here.
Good to have you here. I'm really excited about this interview. So much happened during COVID, and it's so good to be on the other side now. And this is just a really fascinating story of surrogacy and the unexpected. But before we go to it, Jen, did you have any big unexpected things happen to you during COVID?
It was like unexpected, but expected, because it was like military life expected, but we had to move. It was super fun. Like we knew we were moving before COVID hit, and we'd actually put in like an offer on a house and we're working on closing our mortgage, and then COVID hit. And the VA loan says you have to occupy the property within 60 days, which normally wouldn't have been a big deal, right? Like normal days, I just would have flown out, like just gone, checked out the house, like moved some stuff in, except in the height of COVID when everything was shut down, that was nuts. So I like flew on an basically empty flight. I think there were like six of us or something like that from San Francisco to Boston. And rented a car. And there was nobody on the roads. There were no hotels because Connecticut had shut down and said that you can't, hotels were only for first responders. And so I had to like ship all of like an air mattress to the house and like bring like two huge suitcases full of just like linens and towels and toilet paper. Because there was no toilet paper to buy anywhere. And just like drove straight to my new house and spent the first night in this house, which we could get into a whole other story, which turned out was infested with flying squirrels. Oh, and then God. I had to find somebody else. My stories are epic, just like Melissa's story that we're about to hear is also epic, but hers so worth the listen and so amazing. So yes. Here we go.
Let's do it. Welcome, Melissa Whittle, to the podcast. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so thrilled to be here and really honored that you asked me.
We always like to start by having our guests tell a little bit about themselves. So if you want to start by saying where you're from, any fun facts about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So I live in Northern Indiana, right outside of Chicago. And I worked in marketing and public relations for large companies outside of the fertility space for about 20 years. And I was fortunate enough to sort of stumble into the world of art through Men Having Babies. I was their director of events for a number of years, and it was sort of being thrown into the deep end of TPR. I didn't know anything about surrogacy, egg donation, really even IVF. I didn't know what all of these acronyms that
You threw a TPR. So for anyone who didn't know, it's a third party reproduction, right?
See, and now all of these acronyms are like, you know, my everyday vocabulary. And so I just sort of jumped in and started learning. It was a huge learning curve, but I was in a great environment to learn a whole lot really quickly. And I was immediately surrounded by experts in every facet of this space. And it was such a wonderful experience to get to travel to so many places and meet so many different types of families that were looking for these resources, and also to develop these really close relationships with partners in our space, which then led me to work on the agency side of the business for a while in marketing and business development. And when COVID struck us all and our industry really kind of came to a halt for a period of time. I started having some of these partners that I had built relationships with through Men Having Babies reach out to me and say, hey, in this downtime, we're kind of like working on revamping some of our marketing. We're gearing up for projects. We have some extra time to work on things that we wouldn't have the bandwidth for. Would you be able to help us with some things? And so I started taking on some of these projects for some of my friends in this space. And the more I did it, the more it turned into a real life career and job. And so I didn't really start out to build a marketing company focusing on this space, but it happened to me. My business has grown in a very unexpected and humbling way. And I really enjoy so much and feel so fortunate to get to do what I do. I work with tremendous people. I get to do really fun things. And I get to help all of these companies and brands tell their story in the hopes that we reach more families and educate more people about the options that are available to them to build their families.
That's amazing. I think, and I have to lead to how what our conversation is that I say I met you years ago at Men Having Babies, right? Mm-hmm. I think you've actually met my child even because they came with me to Chicago.
Yes,
yeah,
you're there.
So yeah, and in fact the elevator was broken, and I remember like I can't remember what it was, but you were like, "I will help them." Like, yeah, I was stuck in there, and they were trying to get up and down. They like climbed like 100 flights of stairs.
That was a really rough elevator situation. I remember that. Yes,
my marketing expert and savior of those locked in elevators,
children. Exactly. But so I've known you for a long time is the point. And we also are in a book club together. I mean, you know, but what stays in the book club, you know, or what happens in the book club stays in the book club. But I think the existence of it is okay to admit, right?
Yeah.
And I did not know until really recently about this amazing story that we're going to talk about. So do you want to lead in, or do you, or like kind of what is the begin, and I'm being intentionally vague for people here. Okay. This incredible journey and story of, I mean, what? So it goes to your COVID times, right? Because this all happened during COVID.
Yeah.
Where do you start? If you were telling somebody in the grocery store about this amazing story, where would you start?
You know what? That's actually a great intro because I have told this story many times in a grocery store or on an airplane. It's become a really treasured part of my life. So I'm really happy that I get to share it with more people. Because of the relationships that I was able to build in my Men Having Babies days and also working on the agency side of things, during COVID, a lot of Chinese intended parents were very restricted with their travel. They were not allowed to really leave China to go anywhere or for any reason. And there were quite a number of babies being born to surrogates during that time to Chinese intended parents. And the parents literally had no way to get here. There were no exceptions, there were no exemptions. And it was unbelievably strict. And so a clinic reached out to me that I had a really wonderful relationship with and said, we have a dad, a single intended father, whose son is going to be born in Las Vegas in June. And he's going to need somebody to be his legal guardian, to go to the hospital when he's born, to stay with him there in the hospital till he's released, to bring him back home with you for probably 4 or 5 weeks until we can get a visa and his birth certificate and travel documents and things like this. And would you be interested in doing this? And so,
can I just stop? How did this conversation start? Had you thrown it out there that you might be available for something like this?
No, not at all. I was very focused at that time on building Compass Creative and trying to get my bearings, you know, with being an entrepreneur and a new business owner.
Surviving COVID like we all were, right?
COVID.
You were in Indiana still at that time too?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. A partner of this clinic who helps Chinese intended parents in China actually reached out to me and just said, look, you know, we just thought you might be a great person for this. You work from home, you're familiar with what we do. You sort of fit the profile of somebody that we might be looking for to do this. You know, you're very trusted in our space and we would feel really confident about having you take on this role. And here's kind of what it entails, you know, and here are the details. And I was told very upfront, it's going to be very transactional. You know, you're going to be sort of doing this job for this family. And then, you know, likely a nanny or somebody will come and get him and take him back to China once if dad can't come.
And what was your reaction to that request?
I knew some other people who were doing this for other families and had been doing it during COVID. And I was honestly a little bit surprised and it took me, I thought I'm going to need to think about this, you know, for a little while because I just felt like this is such an immense responsibility. And after I considered it pretty thoughtfully for a little while, I thought, you know, this is really something that I can do. It's COVID. I have a lot of time, you know, to be able to, you know, I have extra bandwidth to be able to do something like this. And also I think my personality is sort of like, I just lean into the adventure of things and the experience of things, which has brought a lot of wonderful things to my life.
Yeah.
And
did you have others in your household that you needed to check with, or were you on your own?
No, just me. So I really just had to check in with myself.
the most important person to check with.
Yeah, that's right. And I met with dad. And also along with dad comes grandma and grandpa, comes his mom and dad, who are very involved in the whole process. And
this is by Zoom, or because they can't make it, right?
Right, by Zoom. We met by Zoom.
They even a little bit English speaking?
Dad is bilingual. He's fluent in English and Chinese. Mom and dad are not, they speak zero English.
Okay.
So dad does all of the translation.
I was going to ask, how's your Chinese? How's it now? Yeah.
Well, it's getting better. It's getting better. But it's a really challenging language to pick up on. It's so tonal. You know, even if you know the word, if you say the wrong inflection at the wrong place, it means something totally different. So we met by Zoom, and I first met with dad, just him and I, and the agency in China who was coordinating all of this for him, and sort of just got to know each other a little bit. And then he went back to his parents and said, you know, I think we found somebody who would be a good fit. I want you to meet her. And so we had a big family call with him, mom and dad, and also the baby's soon-to-be godmother, who's very involved. Family raising in China is super multi-generational and very collaborative. And so he really wanted everybody to be on board. And I could tell in that conversation that, in particular, mom was like very skeptical. She was kind of, you know, looking at, giving me the side eye a little bit, like, you know, who is this strange American woman who's going to fly to Las Vegas and she's going to get our grandson who's being born to a different American woman, you know, in a place we've never been. And yeah, you know, they wanted to see the house and they wanted to know, what were my credentials for being able to pull?
But also, what are their choices? They're not in a good position since they should be there.
Exactly. And Belle was sort of translating, you know, to me, you know, we can sort of talk in code because they don't know what we're saying to each other. And he's like, you know, this is just mom's way. This is the Chinese grandmother vibe, you know, so that's to be expected. And so after that conversation, we kind of went back to the agency side and said, you know, yeah, let's do this. Let's figure out all the logistics. When do I need to go? And how is this going to work? And so I was off on this life-changing adventure That I didn't even know how beautiful this story was going to unfold at the time.
And for intended parents, they want to be there like well in advance, a couple of weeks, a month plus, because you don't know when baby will arrive. In this case, were you just waiting for baby to be born, or was the plan to fly out there earlier?
So the surrogate and I then met each other via Zoom with dad and the agency, the American agency that was handling their match, and talked about what would be most comfortable for her, how she was, you know, how she was progressing in her pregnancy, what the expectations were. And she had a scheduled induction date. So that
helps.
That made it easier yeah. for me to plan. So I actually went to Las Vegas almost about a week early, just in case the baby were to come earlier than her scheduled induction date, and got an Airbnb there and sort of set it up for baby's arrival. I brought a lot of things with me, and then some things that, you know, I needed to get, you know, once I was in Las Vegas, and sort of just like tried to prepare myself yeah. as best as I could for what it was going to be like.
And I know grandma asked, but what were your credentials? Had you taken care of a newborn before?
So no, I mean, I would say not technically in this extreme way. My degree is in education, and in a former life, I was a school teacher, an elementary school teacher. And so, I've spent a lot of time with kids and, you know, have lots yeah. of godchildren and nieces and nephews and things like that. But, I don't have any children of my own. And so this was the first time that I was going to be thrown into, you know, the newborn stage.
Yeah.
How overwhelming was that for you? Like, just the feeling. Like, I mean, I can only imagine.
Honestly, I had no fear about what it was going to be like. I somehow innately knew that, like, it was going to be fine. I think I was more curious than I was, like, apprehensive or scared about it. We spent a lot of time leading up to his birth, you know, preparing all the things here in my home as well. So we made a master list of all the things that I would need for when he was here. And we purchased all those things and said, you know, got a crib and got, you know, a tummy time mat and all of the burp cloths and all of the formula and all of these things, to be ready for him. And, the more prepared I was getting, the more really just, I felt, it's a hard to describe how I felt, but I just felt like kind of like I was meant to do this, you know, it was very exciting for me to go to Las Vegas and to meet his surrogate and to, you know, make goodie baskets for the nursing staff and the labor and delivery staff. And I got to do lots of things that you wouldn't necessarily get to do if you were the laboring party situation. And I got to meet her family, and I got to meet her partner. And we got to spend a little time together before we were all just in the labor and delivery room together, which was really lovely. And dad sent lovely gifts for the family and for the kids. And so I got to deliver those, and we became fast friends. And that was a really lovely experience. We sent the car seat and the stroller to her house. She said, just send it to me and we'll put it together, so it'll be all ready when you get here. You won't have to drag it with you from Indiana. And so we all kind of like became this little team.
Yeah.
Getting ready to bring this little guy into the world. And then she went in for her scheduled induction. And I just said, look, I'm not going to come until you're ready for me to be there. So just keep me updated. And her wife was keeping me sort of posted on how things were going. And she said, you know, why don't you come in about an hour or whatever? So I packed up my little hospital bag with way too much stuff. and went over and checked in and went straight into the labor and delivery room and where she was. And it was such a surreal experience because I had never been present for a birth before. And you know, her wife was on one side and I was on the other, and she just all of a sudden, you know, after I'd been there maybe less than an hour, she said, it's time to push. And I was like, okay. And so they went and got the doctor, and I honestly didn't even know what to expect, but she was so brilliantly like strong and focused. She barely even made a noise. She was just like so intensely focused on delivering him. And I just watched him come into the world, and it was, wow. It was absolutely magical. And I feel so honored that I got to be in the room in that moment. It was just beautiful.
In COVID, quite honestly. I mean, it's amazing that they let you in too.
The hospital was really, really accommodating. They were really great. Awesome. They were very familiar with surrogacy births, and they really honored her birth plan. They immediately, you know, gave the baby to her, and she got to see him and hold him. And then they took him and did all of the, you know, newborn tests and checks, and I was there to be able to take videos and pictures for Dad. Mm-hmm. And so he was able to see everything after exactly the way it had happened. And then they put me in a room right next door to her, and the baby was with me, and I got to walk back and forth between my room and her room so that she got to, you know, feed him and hold him and spend time with him. And he and I stayed for two nights. She only stayed one night and then she went home, but he had some additional tests that they had to get finished. And so we just hung out in the hospital and we FaceTimed with Dad and Grandma and Grandpa, and they wanted to see everything about him. You know, they wanted to see him a full body scan of everything. It was then that I sort of got the sense that they were very relieved and very happy that I was there. I think they could tell right away that I was extremely protective of him. Mm. And then we left the hospital and went back to the Airbnb, and we stayed there for about another week because we had to get some initial pediatrician visits out of the way before we could be cleared to fly back home. And so we just kind of hung out and got to know each other. We went for walks and we went down and sat in the shade by the pool, and there was a hotel next door that had an aquarium in it. So we went over to the aquarium every day and walked around, and it was the most fun. It was the most fun. And then we flew back to Chicago, and everybody was oohing and aahing over what a tiny baby he was. And then I was able to start telling this story.
Did you fly alone with him?
I did.
Or did you have some? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, with all your stuff too.
Just me and him and all of our stuff. Yes, exactly. I actually ended up having to ship one of the suitcases back ahead of time because it was with the addition of the car seat and the stroller and this human being. It was more than I could manage comfortably. And so I remember very clearly being on the plane, and the woman sitting next to me was asking me, you know, oh my gosh, how old is your baby? And I said, well, he's not mine. I'm just watching out for him for a little while, and here's the story. And then she told the flight attendant, and then the flight attendant told the pilot, and then they made a big announcement.
Wow.
This was his first flight, and everybody clapped, and they gave him wings and a little, it was the sweetest, cutest thing. And everyone was so charmed by him, and he was great on the flight. And I mean, they're so portable at that age, right? He's only a week old. And so
any sex and flower at that point, right?
Yeah. And all of the flight attendants were fighting over who was going to hold him when I went to the bathroom. And I have during the time that I had him, I encountered so many people like that who were just so touched by our story and, you know, very helpful for, you know, to me, you know, in our adventures as they unfolded.
Okay, so you got home expecting to have a baby for another 3-ish weeks.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Basically they said, he'll probably be with you for a month, month and a half tops. And then we're going to, you know, get this sorted out and we'll figure out a way to get him back. And so that was my expectation. And we sort of started our cadence of communication where we would have a family call every Saturday morning, which was their Saturday night. And then every day I would send a series of pictures and videos of whatever was happening with him. And that was sort of became our way of like staying in touch and being updated. And as this communication grew, my friendship with his dad really grew as well. And we started to really become very close friends. And then we started the process of getting all the paperwork done. So we had to, you know, it's this relay of documents and communication that happens between me and things that are happening here with social security cards and birth certificates and what they need in China to get documents for him to be realized as a citizen there and to be able to travel there and come home and things like that. So we started all of these processes, and as we all know that during COVID, everything was so much harder than
a little bit different. Yeah.
And took so much longer. So I didn't even get the birth certificate for almost 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, Dad was thinking he was going to be home before the autumn festival. So he was going to have this time off and the baby was going to be home and he was going to be able to sort of acclimate himself to fatherhood. And that day sort of came and went. So I had him all of June, all of July, all of August, all of September. And during that time, I mean, honestly, it was the best thing ever. We were just like, we went everywhere together. We did everything together.
Did you have any help? Because I mean, even couples with a newborn are like exhausted and like barely hanging on.
Well, I did have some help. My parents actually live next door to me. And so they were more than delighted to
have
come
a baby
over.
To snuggle on.
Absolutely. My doorbell would ring every day, you know, around lunchtime, and it would inevitably be my dad. And he would have found some item of clothing or some rattle or some, and oh, I found this. And I just thought, you know, maybe the baby would like this. And he would come in, and I'm like, I never saw my parents more, even though they live next door, than when this baby arrived. They have two grandchildren who live in upstate New York, so they don't get to see them all the time. And so all of a sudden next door, they had this, you know, absolutely adorable, yummy little nugget. And so they did help me, you know, if I had to go run an errand or I had a meeting, I could always say, can you come over? But in all honesty, he was really never out of my sight for more than maybe an hour the whole time that I was with him. And we went all kinds of places. We went to the beach, we went to the museum, we went, you know, out to eat, we went to the park, we just, anywhere I went, he just came. And he was, for the most part, a really great baby. He had a period of time around maybe the 2-3 month mark where he, you know, went through some colic and some sleepless nights. But for the most part, we just got on like we were meant to be. And we had the most fun, and I, you know, was there when he laughed for the first time, when he sat up for the first time, you know, when, and those are moments that are, again, I feel so honored to have been a part of that and to be able to sort of capture that the best I could for dad and grandma and grandpa. And we talked every single day, and actually that continues to this day. We have just developed a really special bond and become sort of like a very modern, unique family.
So, to say the least. You got up to August. So I say we're jumping ahead a little bit.
September.
In contact, yeah. In September. And what started to happen then? Because I mean, I know we know this because in the background, I think for a lot of people by September, that was like a lot of people were poking their head out and being like, okay, can we start going places? But
right. We
all know that the international travel part of things was still very, very, very locked down.
It was extremely locked down, and in China, I think more than anywhere else. And so once we started getting his paperwork in process, we got his passport pictures and we got his passport and it came and all of these things. We had to start making some decisions about how we were actually going to get him back to China. And so it was proposed to me that a nanny would come and take him back. But that was still during the time of a strict quarantine upon arrival in China. And so in my mind, like, my mind is reeling that, like, I'm now going to hand this person over that I now love dearly to a complete stranger. And then they are going to take him on a 24-hour trip on an airplane during COVID to a new place that sounds different and feels different and looks different. And then they're going to be in a hotel room locked within, you know, with him for 15 days. And in my gut, I just felt like, I don't think that's going to be the best thing for him. I'm going to offer, if there's a way for me to do it myself, then I'll do whatever I can do to make that happen. And so I floated that idea to dad, and dad was like, well, that would be my preference. Like, if you would be willing to do that, I wouldn't even have asked that of you. And I'm like, you know, I want this to be as easy of a transition for him as possible. And what are the options for me to come? And it was so limited, the types of visas they were giving to foreigners at that time. And so we sort of looked at the available options, and then we thought, let's just try and see if I could get a temporary, like a visa for coming for work purposes. And so, we then embarked on a whole nother paperwork odyssey of, all of the documents that you have to submit and the letters and the requests and the applications, to get a visa, without really any real strong confidence that we were going to be granted one. And dad was sort of working with some of his contacts on the Chinese side that work in visas. And they sort of gave us some insider tips on how to word things and how to go about this. And
just to be clear, like, you can't be open, right? Because surrogacy is not permitted in China. So you couldn't just be like, hey, this baby was born, I need to get the baby home.
We had to be delicate about that, for sure. So it was sort of communicated that this was a Chinese friend of mine's baby, and that I was coming to China for work, which technically was true-ish, and and that I was coming and I was bringing this baby with me to come home. And not a lot of questions were asked about that, really. I think it's a very, like, the way that their government processes work is very black and white, and I was asking for a work visa, and Lewis has the baby has a passport, and so he was coming with an American woman as an American child. And so they didn't ask a lot of questions about that until I actually got to China and I was entering. And then there was a lot of questions about that. And so one day this visa just came in the mail and I got it. And it
You're
was
like, oh, okay.
I was like, oh, wow. Be careful what you wish for. We're going to China. So actually we were all so relieved because it made mom and dad and grandma and grandpa and dad feel, I think, much less stressed that I was going to be with him. And I'm a known quantity at this point. So like, they know that I'm going to take great care of him. They know that he's going to be comfortable with me and I'm going to bring all the things. And they also, we were all very excited that we would be able to meet each other as well. Right. So we started then making a new plan of all the things that we needed to do for arrival in China, for testing, for quarantining, all of, you know, the things that we had to pack, et cetera, et cetera. Which, you know, I think that was probably the part of this I was the least prepared for, just because COVID had somewhat become less of an emergency in America. But in China, it was still very much a crisis, whether real or somewhat government manufactured, it was still very much treated like it was a crisis. And so there were a lot of hoops that we had to jump through in order to be allowed in. So we had to fly from Chicago to Los Angeles for 3 days. We had to be tested on arrival in Los Angeles and then for the next day. So for 2 days we had testing so that we could fly on the third day. So we had to do that piece. We had to have both of us, baby and me, had to have 2 consecutive negative PCR tests before we were allowed to get on the plane. And then we flew from Los Angeles direct to Guangzhou, which is about almost 16-hour flight. Ooh, and wow. It was the most bizarre flying experience I could even ever imagine. Everyone in the crew was in full hazmat, including the pilots.
Whoa.
The full moon suits, the gloves, masks, face shields. There was no food or beverage service during the flight.
For 16 hours? Did you bring food for yourself, hopefully?
I did. So because we had a little bit of time and dad is so connected, you know, to the information that's happening in China, he was able to get some insider information on how this was going to go down. So and I did a lot of research on what the quarantine would be like and what are things that you need to bring in quarantine, like a clothesline and laundry soap and, you know,
stuff
snacks.
You don't think about. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff wow. I didn't, not just all the things that the baby would need during that time, like diapers and formula and all of his stuff, but also just like, you literally cannot leave this room for 15 days. And so, you know, there were a lot of things to consider. So I had been given the information that you need to bring food and drinks and stuff to make formula and things like that for the plane. Because I had tried to order a vegetarian meal and they were like, no, we're not doing that right now. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was told there will be no food or beverage service. And so I was like, okay, noted. And you know, of course everybody had to wear masks the whole time and you had to try to distance as much as possible. And upon arrival,
was the flight pretty full? Like, how were other passengers?
It was surprisingly full, more so than I anticipated. But it was the only people that were on the flight were either people who were Chinese citizens that were able to return back to China. So they had maybe moved abroad, but they had a Chinese passport and they were technically able to travel back to China. And people who had been given some sort of special access, like if you had a direct family member, a member of your immediate family who was sick or had passed away, even if you weren't a Chinese national, if you were American, but you were related to a Chinese citizen in one of those situations, then you could be granted a special visa. And so most of the people on the plane fell into that category, is they were going back for some special circumstance with a family member. But it was not completely full.
And I'm guessing it's not like the Las Vegas flight. People aren't wanting to hold your baby.
Everybody was. I was the only American Caucasian person that was not of Chinese descent on the plane. And so here I was very much a spectacle, because here I am by myself with this baby, with all of this stuff, you know, boppies and strollers and car seats. And, you know, and a lot of people on the flight didn't speak English either. And so people were checking us out for sure. Like, what is the situation here? And then we arrived in China, and at that time there was a series of like applications that you had to fill out, arrival documents, and everything is done through their app, WeChat there. And so I had to become very quickly accustomed to how to use WeChat and how to translate things from Chinese to English. And I had to do two sets of everything for arrival, because one for me and one for the baby, that says where we were coming from, what, you know, what flight we were on, how long we were staying, what was our reason for being there. And you're immediately just thrust into an environment where it's very disorienting. You've been traveling and up for, you know, a day and a half now, but then also very few people speak fluent English. So it's not like many other places in the world where you travel, where Americans kind of take for granted that if I go to Paris, people are going to speak English, or if I go to Barcelona,
or you can find somebody who does it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like that in China. And so I was in very close contact with Dad at this time. And he was, you know, we're here, and he was helping me through things. We were on the phone, and I'm filling out all these things, you know, in some version of Chinese and English. And you have to get, you know, an approval code in the application. And then you go to the next stage, which is you're both tested again upon arrival at the airport. So they had all of these like little tiny testing rooms set up at the airport. The airport is empty. Everything is closed. None of the restaurants, none of the shops are open. You are barricaded into a corridor, basically, of where you can and can't go. So they're very much keeping everybody in a very tight process of completing all of these steps. So you're tested, and it's a rapid test. And so once you're cleared there, then you go down to get your luggage, which has been sprayed with Clorox. So everything is
And all of this you're doing while you're also tending to a baby. Yeah.
Yes. So I have him in the carrier, you know, he's like strapped to me, and it was so much luggage. So I had three suitcases, the car seat, his baby bag, the stroller, him, my backpack. So I just had like, I had a truckload of stuff. And Dad had told me that the word on the street was, it's good to be towards the end of the line when you get your luggage. So you get your luggage, and then you're immediately sort of pushed into this next line, which is the line where the buses are coming to take you to a quarantine hotel. And you don't know where this hotel may be. So it may be 3 hours away. It may be 3 miles away. So basically the government was contracting with hotels on a rotating basis. So for this month, your hotel is going to be a quarantine hotel. And so we're going to send people to you. And then the next month it would sort of change. So there was no way to say like, I want to be at this hotel. I want to have this type of room. Wow. It was all a gamble and very much unknown. And so, ironically, because we had so much stuff and I was by myself, we were moving quite slow. And so we were automatically going to be at the end of the line. And at that time, there was this lovely group of friends and some family members who were sort of also at the tail end of the arriving passengers. And they took gracious pity on me and said, oh my gosh, this is way too much stuff for you. What is happening? Let us help you. And one of the husbands said, I'm going to take the bags. And so he got a cart, and he put all the bags on there, and they we all sort of became like fast friends in our queue to get on some unknown bus to go some unknown place. And we ended up being on the very last bus of our airplane. And again, I don't speak any Chinese. And so, you know, the everybody around me is talking and they're asking the bus driver, where are we going? And we drove for less than 5 minutes and we ended up at an airport hotel. And I was so thankful because nice. At this time, you know, we're very haggard from traveling, but also now everything has been sprayed with bleach. We're on a bus that has been sprayed with bleach. So it's all so rusted out inside. Was the
driver's hazmat suit too?
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Everyone at the airport was dressed in hazmat. Everyone that I had seen so far in country had been fully outfitted with all of the biohazard gear.
Wow.
We arrive at a hotel. Again, there's like a plexiglass corridor from where you get off of the bus and you're collecting all your luggage. And then you go into the hotel. The reception is completely barricaded off with plexiglass. And there's a very tiny little like microphone that you're communicating through. And the communication, I have to say, I'm so thankful that Dad was helping run interference, because once we pulled up to the hotel and I told him what hotel we were at, he immediately called reception and said, my son is there with my friend and she doesn't speak Chinese. And so here's what I need to have happen. I need her to have the best room available. She's a vegetarian. I need her to have vegetarian meals, blah, 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 blah. And so by the time I got up to the window, he was on the phone with me and I basically just handed him, you know, he just said, you know, like, this is what I've told them. And so thankfully that the guy at reception did speak enough English to know, he's like, yes, he already called. So he got me a beautiful room in this hotel, nice. Which had lots of space.
Good.
You have to fill out a lot of crazy paperwork. They spray your bag again with a Clorox solution.
Wow.
So you just get up there. Everything smells toxic. You know, you're gross from traveling. I've been spit up on and pooped on and several times by this time. So it was just an exhausting experience, but also I look back at it and I'm just like, what a crazy time to do this crazy thing, and have this experience. So we go up to the room. They lock us in. There's an alarm on the door. So if you open the door for more than 10 seconds, an alarm goes off.
Oh.
So you really cannot leave. Everybody from our bus, you know, is basically escorted to whatever their room is. And then for the next 15 days, I had about 30 channels of Chinese television. And
no Netflix?
Well, that requires internet, which is a challenge in China. So they bring you 3 meals a day. You get what you get. They did give me vegetarian meals, which I really appreciated, but I had also come prepared with like a little an electric camping stove pot thing that I could cook like my own stuff in. I brought lots of snacks and like things that you could quickly make on the fly. I asked them for a little mini fridge, in which they brought because, you know, of the baby, which really wasn't for the baby. It was more for me to have cold drinks, because cold drinks are not a thing in China.
Right.
Forget about ice, ladies. Forget about that.
Oh, I lived in Europe. Believe me.
So they were as accommodating as they could have been under the circumstances. And then they came every day and you had a COVID test every single day and you had temperature checks 3 times a day. So they would just knock on the door whenever they knocked on the door and they would take my temperature. They would take the baby's temperature. They would record it. And then every day at some point they would come and they would do the swab for me and for him, for 15 days. And so after I was there we immediately then just collapsed. We took baths and showers and we went to bed. And then, you know, started sort of setting up our house as it was in the hotel room. So like a play area and a sleeping area. And like, you know, there was like a little kitchen sort of area, although it wasn't really a kitchen, but it was like a, you know, sort of like a wet bar area where I had all of the formula and all of the bottle making stuff and bottle washing stuff. And then a laundry area in the bathroom and things like that. And I still needed to work while I was there. And so
With the non-existent internet. Yeah.
With the non-existent internet. So I said to dad, I said, you know, how do we get around this? And he said, let me take care of it. And so he was able to get me a very reliable VPN there that worked great on my mobile and on my computer. And so then I was able to get Netflix. And I was able to work, and the time difference. So, you know, I was 12 hours ahead of most everybody, or 15 hours ahead of most everybody that I work with here in the States. And so once the jet lag kind of subsided a bit, I was able to get back to work, and we kind of established a little routine. And several times dad came to the hotel and stood outside of our window, and we waved at each other while we were on the phone talking to each other.
Sweet.
He said, I just want to be close to where you are. You know, I just want you to know that I'm here. And
that gives me chills. Oh.
He came a couple of times and did that. And I could really sense there was like an anticipation, but also a little bit of anxiety on his part. You know, he didn't really know what to expect. And he wasn't getting a newborn. He was getting, you know, a 5.5 month old that was, you know, already had a routine and already had preferences and, you know, a personality. And he was about to be thrust, you know, very much into the throes of having a baby and being a dad. I think it was sort of ephemeral until all of a sudden he knew we were right up the street. And he was like, wow, like reality is coming at me quickly. So once we got closer to the quarantine being over, it was kind of a wild thing. On the last day, they just came to the room and opened the door and said, you can go. And I was like,
go. I kind of expected a ceremony.
Like a ceremony. Yeah, exactly. A ceremony or something.
I was like, I can just go. And they're like, yeah, you're a free bird now. You can go. And I was like, okay. So, you know, we had known that I was going to be able to leave at that time, but we didn't know like what at that day, but we didn't know what time they were going to let us go or anything. And so, I started packing, you know, I'd been packing everything up. I started getting everything ready to go down, and, dad was waiting with, the baby's godmother. They had come in a car to get us. And, they were on the side of the building and I came out the front door, and it's the first time I've been outside in 2 weeks and been in the sunshine. It was a beautiful day, a beautiful hot day in China. And we walked out, and I walked around the corner and I saw dad and godmother, and he just came running towards me. Mel, Mel, Mel. And, you know, we did the whole, like, you know, very Hallmark, you know, run and embrace and crying. And I was like, here's your son. And I handed the baby to him. And then the baby immediately started shrieking and crying.
Oh, no.
Ouch. So the first picture we have, the first picture we have of him holding the baby, he's absolutely hysterical. And he held him for about 10 seconds and said, okay, I'm going to give him back to you, because he's not happy with me. And, I said, well, it's very overwhelming. You know, it's been kind of a crazy ride for him the last few weeks as well. So we got all the luggage and all the gear and got in the car, and I soon realized that car seats are very optional in China, which gave me intense anxiety. because I had been so conscious of strapping this kid in for dear life everywhere right. we went. And then we get in and they just threw the car seat in the back of the van. And I was like, we're going to need that. And
he
was
like, oh, like, this is how it works.
you can just hold him. And I was like, hold him? And he was like, yeah, you can just hold him. And I was like, while we're moving? And he was like, yeah, it's no problem. And I was like, it's a problem. And he was like, it's not a problem here. Like, car seats are not, it's not like that in America. He was like, is this very serious in America? And I'm like, yeah, they'll take your license away. Yes, it's very serious. So I'm just like holding him while we are in the, because there was no seats for the car seat. The car was full. And I was like, okay, here we go. We drove from the airport to the apartment where grandma and grandpa live, which is in the suburbs of Guangzhou. Dad has another apartment downtown in the central business district close to his work. And this apartment is in the suburbs. And grandma and grandpa have moved from their home in Hunan to this apartment in Guangzhou in order to be able to help raise baby. Because single dad who has a very big job in China that requires travel and a lot of work, you know, is going to need help. And again, it's very much an expectation in China that the grandparents are going to have a starring role in raising their grandchildren. When you go to the playground in China, you don't see a lot of moms and dads. You see a lot of grandmas and grandpas. So we drove to this apartment and mom and dad are, grandma and grandpa are standing out on the corner as we're, you know, pulling in. They knew we were coming. And I remember them just trotting behind the car, trying to like get to us as fast as they could. Oh. And finally we, you know, the car stopped and we got out and got all the stuff and went up to the apartment and, you know, grandma was dying to get her hands on this kid. and I just handed him to them and I have the most beautiful photo of them looking, just gazing at him. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, you're really here, buddy. Like, and it was such a beautiful, heartwarming moment for me and very gratifying to, although I was very attached to him and I love him very much. He was home where he was meant to be all along. And so I felt very relieved to have gotten him there in one piece and in a really cute outfit. And
most importantly,
that's right.
Love it.
We were all then living for the next 2 weeks in this somewhat small apartment for, you know, grandma, grandpa, me, dad, and a housekeeper, a little tiny dog, one bathroom, three bedrooms in this, you know, gigantic apartment block in China, which is such a common, you know, living situation there. And so mom and dad, again, don't speak any English. And so which I still have now and use quite frequently, we got a translator, which is like a little device about the size of a cell phone that translates back and forth into English and Chinese. And so I'm able to speak into it in English and it says what I'm saying in Chinese and they understand it. And then they can speak back into it in Chinese and it comes back to me in English. And so we were able to communicate, particularly important when dad went to work. And I was just there alone with them and no one there speaks English, you know, except for me.
Yeah.
And there was an immense amount of food being cooked and, it was just very joyful and celebratory. And, grandma really said to me, you know, just tell me how you do what you do. I'm going to learn from you because I want to keep it the same for him. Like I want him to have a very easy transition. And so we just kind of jumped into baby school and spent the next few weeks just really together in that apartment. There was an uptick in COVID cases in Guangzhou during that time. So we had some plans of going some places and doing some things, but everything then became extremely locked down, where like I was going to go to Shanghai, but Shanghai wasn't accepting passengers from Guangzhou because the numbers in Guangzhou were high. So we really couldn't leave Guangzhou, which I really think was fortunate for all of us because it allowed us to just be there together and be with the baby and for them to bond and for me to start detaching a little bit and handing some of those things over. And during that time, we had to be tested every single day. So we would go downstairs to the courtyard. There was a testing sort of facility set up in the courtyard of the apartment block where everybody would go and queue. And it was open from like 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. And
so like every human, no matter what, had to be tested every day?
Every human had to be tested every day. Now, the baby didn't have to be tested, but everybody over, I think, the age of 6 had to be tested.
Wow.
And you would go anywhere in the city and you would just see these long lines of people. There would be testing sites set up. And if you hadn't been tested that day, you could just get into any line. And it was all administrated through WeChat. So you could you could open up your app to your health page, basically, health status page. And it had a timer on it. So when you get tested, it starts at 24 hours. And you have a green code. And so in order to get into anywhere, a restaurant, a mall, a library, a museum.
You had to have had your green code. Okay.
You had to have a green code. And then once it goes to 48 hours, it would turn orange. Once it goes to 72 hours, then it turns red. And so the orange is basically saying like, you need to get tested today. If it's red, you really can't go anywhere. And if it's red, many times they would find you, they would come to your house and test you there. That actually happened to us one time.
Wow.
We were just orange and we hadn't left the house that day. And so we were going to go down in the morning and be tested. And ding dong, three guys in hazmats came to the apartment and said, you guys all need to be tested. there was also a lot of contract tracing going on. So like if somebody in your building got COVID, then they would come and test everybody that day again to try to, you know, stop, prevent an outbreak or quarantine people who were possibly exposed. So it was all very connected and very regulated. And it was really interesting as an American to see the level of compliance with these measures. Everybody everybody just adapted to it. Everybody got in line. It was like clockwork. It was, you know, you got in line, you sat on this little stool, they swabbed you, you got up. They put your thing in, you know, and it's all connected to your QR code in your app. So they know your test, you know, before they do the test, they scan your app. So they know this test goes with you. And it was just a machine. And when the restriction was over, I mean, it was like the next day, I wasn't there, but Dad had told me, you know, like the next day they were all gone. When China decided that their policies were over and they were going to open up, there was no easing out of it. It was,
wow,
tomorrow you don't have to do this anymore. And all the testing sites went away and you didn't have to wear masks. And it was just overnight, it was just over.
Wow.
So the whole time I was there, we were tested every day. Wherever we were, we would find the line and get in it. And I have pictures of us, you know, standing in the rain, standing at night, standing early in the morning, getting tested in these long queues of people trying to keep their codes green.
That's amazing. So you stayed a couple weeks, headed home.
I stayed a couple weeks. And then I decided, since I was so close, I thought, you know, I'm going to go to Thailand on a vacation when I leave here. So I had booked a trip to Thailand from China. I had never been. I thought, you know, it'd be silly not to go if I'm this close. And I was thinking, I'm going to have this nice, relaxing vacation. And this is going to be a great way to celebrate, you know, getting baby home, and I'll do some fun stuff. And, I was completely hysterical the whole day that we were getting ready to leave. It was so much harder than I anticipated. And I think I had probably been like putting it out of my mind subconsciously for the whole time I was there. And I had just become so accustomed to him being my shadow. And leaving him at the airport was, and not just him, but also leaving his dad and his grandparents, who, you know, I had become so attached to and so close to in the short amount of time that we were together. It was really challenging to leave. And then I got to Thailand and I was just so mentally exhausted and also a little emotionally distraught and so used to not sleeping soundly through the night that I was like, I'm going to sleep in, I'm going to rest, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go out at night, I'm going to do all this, you know. And I just was like, I just didn't really have an appetite to have that, to have a big fun time. After a few days, it got better. And also, you know, our communication routine continued. And so we continued to talk every day and send pictures and voice messages and videos. And as I said earlier, that continues to this day.
And my understanding, remind me if I'm wrong, like you've been back again to see them as well, right?
I have. So he turned one last June. And so Dad said, you know, it's really important for me to be here. If you want to come for his birthday, we really want you to come. And so I was like, yes, of course. So I went back for a month this summer, and because COVID basically evaporated in the time that since I had left, we were able to do lots of fun things. We Dad threw an absolutely lovely, very traditional first birthday for the baby. I got to be a part of that and got to experience. It's a very big ritual when the baby turns one in China, and they do all these very traditional things with the family members. And so I got to be there for that. And then, you know, I also got to travel a little bit and go to Beijing and see the Great Wall and go to Shanghai. And we got to do lots of fun things that we weren't able to do when I was there the first time. And I'm actually getting ready to go back at the end of February for 2 weeks.
Nice. To see
again.
I knew that too. Yeah, I was going to say. Amazing. That was the other one that you're going to go back again.
Yeah, so I'm going for the first 2 weeks of March to go back and see him. And he's going to start a Montessori school in the beginning of April. And so Dad said, you know, I'm already going to be in Taipei for a work conference. And so he said, we really would like to have you come, and I want you to see his school and meet his teacher, and I want you to give me your advice. And, you know, even though I am not his mother, they say to me, you're the only mom he's ever going to have. And his dad and I have really established this really lovely friendship where, you know, he'll ask my opinion, or he'll tell me things that have happened and ask me if I think, you know, is this normal, or, you know, my friend told me this, but Lewis isn't doing this. And, you know, I think it's comforting for him in a way to have somebody else to sort of bounce things off of that he knows has the baby's best interests in mind and loves him very much. And when I'm there, mom and dad tell people, you know, this is our daughter from America.
Aww.
We have just become a family that I never expected having, but it has been an absolute, it's been such an extraordinary experience for me and addition to my life. And I feel like I have this whole other family on the other side of the world that is now a part of my life forever. And it was something that was meant to be initially very transactional and very temporary has become, you know, he's the love of my life. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's my amazing. God. What an amazing story. Oh, thank you so much for sharing with us. It was even more amazing than I had anticipated. So.
Oh. Thank you for the opportunity to tell this story. I think that sometimes in America, we tend to be a little myopic about our feelings about China in particular. And I certainly didn't know what to expect when I went there, but I fell in love with that country, with the culture, with the food. Oh my goodness. With the people. I have not one negative thing to say about my experience. In fact, quite the opposite. It's brought a lot of love and a lot of joy to my life. And if I could do it again, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
It's incredible.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks to Melissa for sharing her story. So, so fascinating. So amazing.
Epic, but, right?
An amazing person. And thank you to you for listening to these stories and our episodes. And if you ever feel like giving back.
Maybe you should call.
Okay. Give us a call.
Yeah.
Can they text us? I feel like
maybe 303-997-1903. Somebody should try it.
I don't think it'll work.
I think through that system I have, it might work.
Oh, okay.
So somebody should try it and see, and then
what
they
call up with a voicemail.
It's 303-997-1903. And believe it or not, we do actually listen to the voicemails and we get ideas for things. Like we have something coming up, but we have an upcoming interview. We couldn't schedule for a couple months, but that actually called and was like, I'd love to tell my story. So if you have a story that you want to tell, give us a call. We are happy to get you on here. Again, one more time, 303-997-1903, or you can go to our website and leave us a message through there, because there's a lovely little form that you can submit. Anyway, carrier pigeons, however you want to reach out to us, we are happy to respond. So
stars, rating the podcast, always good too.
Yes. And then while you're on our website, you can obviously go look at the merch, because it's amazing. So, thank you to everybody who listens. Of course, thank you to our team. Thank you to Melissa, to Amanda, to Tyler, and to everybody who behind the scenes makes this work for us. So thank you.